their phone number.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Telecom's 2008, where you get started for today. We do have a quorum now, so we'll begin the meeting. I think the first thing we'll take care of is the approval of the minutes for the 13th of April, September 18th, and October 17th. So if I could get a motion to approve from Mr. Szymanski, or Representative Szymanski.
Mr. Chairman, I move the approval of the minutes of previous meetings.
Motion's been moved. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevailed. The minutes are approved. Just as a way of introduction, to give you some idea of where we're going with that. Telecom this year. We're going to hear a few bills, and some of them I'm going to roll into an omnibus bill that's going to be coming out a little bit later in a couple weeks, and then a couple bills are just going to pass right out and let it take its course. So that's kind of generally speaking the plan, so you'll kind of see that as we move forward here. So with that, let's go ahead and get started with the first bill, which happens to be my bill, and I think I'll just do it right from the table. And if Mr. Knickerbocker wants to come down, and I'll move House File 2414, the Telecommunications Obsolete Rules Appealed, and I can move this be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And Mr. Knickerbocker, if you want to identify yourself for the record and speak real specifically and clearly about what you're doing.
I will, Mr. Chairman. There's also an amendment that needs to be added to the bill.
Okay, I'll go ahead and move the amendment. That's Amendment 2414DE1.
Mr. Chairman, we have the bill as amended before us.
You want to vote on that?
Motion's before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is in front of us as amended.
Mr. Chairman, members, House Bill 2414 is the bill that repeals a number of obsolete telecommunication rules. And how this bill originated was out of a conversation that we had with some of the regulators about the outdated telecommunication rules written for another time, another type of technologies, and not really reflecting what's going on out there in the real world today in terms of the technology that's being used and the marketplace. So what we did was last year sit down and go through Chapter 78, and there are 54 rules in that particular section of the law, and we identified 22 that were out of date, needed to be updated, over 40%. So we met during the past summer and fall. When I say we, I mean the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, which is a trade group of all the local phone companies in the state, met with the PUC staff and Department of Commerce staff and the Attorney General's office to review the rules that we had all agreed were out of date. Through that process, we tried to develop some language for the rules that we agreed needed to be kept but needed to be modernized. So we had a series of telephone calls, personal meetings, and did round-robining of language. And basically, we have agreed amongst ourselves to rewrite 14 of the existing telecom laws to update and modernize them to fit the type of technology that's being used today. And we're going to ask the PUC to open up a rulemaking under in terms of Chapter 14 to address those 14 rewritten telecom laws. The rules that were left over, I should have said rules rather than laws, the rules that were left over, the eight that we have put on the bill this morning that are remaining are deemed obsolete, that have been addressed in other places in existing law. The policies have been maintained, and either the rewritten rules that all of us are going to be participating with in this rulemaking coming up over at the commission, or they basically have been kept in another rule that maybe wasn't going to need to be amended. So what we have left in the course of conversations and the meetings that the AG's office, the department, commission, and the industry members have had over the past year and a half on this issue, there are these 8 obsolete rules that need to be repealed that we all agreed are now obsolete. And Mr. Chairman, just with that, I think the members have some sort of a summary prepared by a researcher about what each of these rules do. As I said, all of the regulator and their agencies and members have agreed that these are obsolete. Many of these go back 45 years. If there are specific questions about a specific rule, I'd be happy to try to answer those. But other than that, I think everyone I'm aware of is okay with repealing these 8 obsolete rules. There's no
and to make it say again who you met with and when you met, and who's on board on all this.
We started last about a year and a half ago, the first conversations with the PUC staff, the Public Utilities Commission, and then convened a meeting with the Department of Commerce and the Public Utilities Commission and the Attorney General staff. And we had a series of meetings with different people representing those three agencies over the course of the last year and a half. And the outcome is that 22 of the rules, as I said, all agreed, you know, are outdated and need to be updated. We're going to rewrite 14 of them and requested rulemaking. The other 8 are obsolete and are being asked to be repealed in this bill here this morning. So I'm not sure what else I could add to that, Mr. Chairman.
Sufficient members, any questions right now? Folks in the audience, there's the opportunity to step forward and testify if you have any opposition in particular, I guess.
Chair, do you have anyone else from the PUC here?
Question is, there anyone from the PUC here? I don't see anyone.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mark Oberlander and Kevin O'Grady were the 2 staff people that attended the meetings and worked on language. They worked for Dr. Haar.
Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty.
Well, Mr. Chair, the reason I ask is that in reading Mr. Elof's summaries of the rules, I can understand why we might want to repeal these if they are simply redundant or covered in essence some other place, but none of them seems to me to be what I would describe just on the face of it as obsolete. So I was hoping we'd have some assurance from someone other than one of the providers that indeed as Mr. Knickerbocker described, these are more redundant than simply things we don't want to do anymore.
I think Ray's good point there, Representative Hilty, and what I can do as I lay the bill over is I'll check with PUC and Mr. Oberlander and just
well, I see Commissioner Garvey
in assurance.
To give us reassurance, perhaps.
Garvey.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce for Energy and Telecommunications. My staff has informed me that they've had communications with the Public Utilities Commission staff and that they've been assured, my staff has been assured by the Public Utilities Commission staff that they are comfortable with the proposal that's before the committee right now.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is very similar to Representative Hilty's. I just want to make sure that the consumer protections that are in here in a couple of these rules are indeed redundant and will appear someplace else. Is that the case? Thank you.
All right, members, if there's no other comments and there's no other testimony forthcoming from the audience, I'm going to renew my motion that 2414 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and we'll make sure we gain further assurance on the issues that were raised there. Thanks, Mr. Knickerbocker, for your testimony.
Welcome. Thank you, members.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty?
It occurs to me in that regard that if these are basically rules that at least the substance of which exists to come up some other place in rules, maybe what we could do before we have any final action on this is get from the PUC a list of the rules in which these ideas are incorporated.
Very good. Good suggestion. We can do that. All right, well, let's move forward to the next item on our agenda. Representative Mason. House File 2107 on telecommunication goals, broadband policy.
Mr. Chair, committee, thank you very much. I'd like to move House File 2107, but before we get into discussion, I do have a delete all amendment, and could we address that first?
Okay. Well, Representative Mason moves that House File 2107 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the, I think it's the Commerce and Labor Committee we're going to go to next.
Exactly.
But first, we're going to deal with the delete all amendment to get the bill in the shape that you're so inclined.
And basically what the delete all does is...
First, let me move it for you there, Representative Mason. Again, Representative Mason moves House File 2107, DE2. Members get a chance to take a look at that briefly. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Okay, thank you very much. As you see, it's a fairly simple bill. What we did with the goal is to change it a little bit. Before we had a goal to work with, now we have a minimum in the meantime, and it focuses more on the task force and lets them define the parameters. And to help to, give you a little bit more background, I'm going to ask Todd Hausnick to give a presentation.
Go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. My name is Todd Hauschild. I lead a business unit for Thompson West. I'm also past chair of the Minnesota High Tech Association and current board member with that organization. The Minnesota High Tech Association accelerates the growth, sustainability, and global competitiveness of Minnesota's technology-based economy through public policy advocacy, member collaboration, education, and community outreach. The MHTA is the only membership organization that represents Minnesota's entire technology-based economy. MHTA members include over 325 organizations of every size, involved in virtually every aspect of technology creation, production, application, education in Minnesota. I'm here today to speak in support of this bill, to ask you for your support of this bill. We are troubled by the nation's continued slide in broadband market penetration. According to the International Telecommunications Union, the U.S. dropped from first place in the 90s to fourth place in 2002 to 15th in 2006 in broadband penetration. We encourage the state to adopt a policy framework to reverse this trend in Minnesota. When we look to the future of broadband, we talk about ultra-high-speed broadband. That is, bandwidth of no less than 250 megabits per second bidirectional. Why do we have to think in these terms? Well, Brett Swanson of the Discovery Institute in Seattle coined the term exaflood in January of 2007, Wall Street Journal editorial. An exaflood is the increasing torrent of data flooding through the Internet. The amount of information people upload, download, and share on the Internet is growing due in large part to video, audio, and photo applications at an exponential rate, while the capacity of the Internet, its bandwidth, is limited to susceptible to a flood. This flood can be in the magnitude of multiple exabytes, and an exabyte is equal to 1 billion gigabytes, a tremendous amount of data. To put this amount of data being created on the Internet into scope, if you took all the original broadcasts and cable TV and all radio content, that equals about 1/10 of an exabyte every year. Last year alone, YouTube generated 6/10 of an exabyte. That's 6 times as much content as the all original and cable TV and radio content for an entire year. There's a vast amount of data being created every year. Last year, we, as part of the Internet community, created 161 exabytes of data. In 2010, that number will be 988 exabytes of data. The trend is certainly moving in a direction of more network content, traffic, and usage. However, Minnesota is going in the opposite direction compared to our peers. According to a 2007 Information Technology Innovation Foundation study, the U.S. ranks 15th internationally in average broadband speed available to the consumer. In the United States, Minnesota ranks 26th in download speed and 22nd in upload speed. So we're in the middle of the pack as far as the United States. We have a chart that's also in the packet that was handed out to talk about what is happening across the nation in different states. When you look at what's going on in the other states, you see that Minnesota is only one of 14 states that do not have a broadband task force, a broadband plan or policy, or broadband legislation. We spent a fair amount of time researching what other states are doing in regards to increasing broadband deployment. We've studied legislation that has been enacted in other states, reviewed numerous articles and websites in order to create the material you've seen today. In your folder, you'll find 2 documents which summarize that information. The state broadband mapping document identifies states that have a task force plan or policy and those that have existing broadband legislation. The second document identifies the categories of those legislations that exist within those states. Approaches do vary by state. Some states have chosen to create telecommunications authorities like Vermont or advisory councils like Louisiana. Others are enacting coordination, deployment, rights of ways, or taxation legislation, just to highlight a few of the categories. Whatever has been done in these states, the bottom line is that states are moving forward. An increasing number of states are working toward identifying opportunities for increased broadband deployment and adoption. Other states have enacted legislation that is consistent with House File 2107. Why is this important to us? Why is it important to Minnesota? From an economic development standpoint, if you understand what's going on in this global economy, factories and manufacturing jobs are moving overseas at a fast pace. And the new economy is more information-based technology. So if you have this infrastructure, then business can locate here, prosper here, and develop here. And also importantly, stay here. According to Michael Porter, who leads the telecommunications initiative in Fairfield, Iowa, high-speed optical fiber networks will have the same kind of impact on town as railroads did in the 19th century. He's leading a team that is revitalizing Fairfield, Iowa, and drawing business and commerce to there because of a broadband presence. In a seminal 2005 report from Carnegie Mellon and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, the economic impact of broadband deployment was illustrated well. They compared several economic indicators within zip codes that have broadband access and those without. Few quotes from that report. Broadband enhances economic activity, helping to promote job creation both in terms of the total number of jobs and the number of establishments in communities with broadband. Also, the present study has several clear implications for policymakers. The most obvious and important implication is that broadband does matter to the economy. Statistically, they draw out that employment Employment annual growth rate is about 1% higher than those zip codes that did not have broadband access. Property values are over 6% higher based on rental rates in those geographies, and almost 0.5% higher rate of growth of the number of businesses in those counties and zip codes were reported, and over 0.5% increase in the share of establishments in these IT-intensive sectors of business. The U.S. Department of Commerce distributed this report and added, "The results support the view that broadband access does enhance economic growth and performance, and that the assumed economic impacts of broadband are real and measurable." That's from the U.S. Department of Commerce. Another option is telecommuting. Telecommuting can save employers up to $5,000 per year per employee, reduce air pollution and peak traffic congestion, reduce the need for highway expansion. It's critical for disaster recovery, business continuity purposes. It's essential for pandemic planning for businesses, and it improves the quality of work-life balance for employees and increases the effectiveness of employees. For education, high-speed ultra-band broadband can reduce classroom costs by substitutions of textbooks, adds new art, music, and craft skills, attracts a stimulant for children. It increases a variety of teaching methods available and gives access to teachers to provide specialized curriculum not available in local school districts. Telemedicine, another area of interest. Virtual Radiology, which is a Minneapolis-based business, uses high-speed broadband to enable short-staffed nighttime emergency rooms to outsource image reading to radiologists throughout the country. You'll hear more testimony about this promising area soon. Development of electronic medical records and provide monitoring technology for senior citizens in rural areas. There are always naysayers when we look into legislation and policy such as this. Some will tell you that there's no demand for speeds faster than we have now. You'll see some letters that have testimony to the contrary. Also, history has also showed us that leadership breeds innovation. Edison led the way with the light bulb in bringing electricity to rural areas. He couldn't have imagined the refrigerator, the dishwasher, TVs, or computers. The space program brought so many byproducts to us, including today's navigation system. And the Internet itself came out of a defense project to coordinate radar defenses, but the application for the Internet followed. Some will tell you the price is too high. However, technology paces on our side. Costs decrease while capabilities increase. Moore's Law shows us that technology capability doubles every 18 to 24 months for the same dollar. Compression technology is advancing. We are getting more out of existing infrastructure than we thought possible already, with more room to grow and more innovation there. Some will say this is not commercially viable, that some costs of existing infrastructures are too overbearing and that they have insufficient capital to invest. However, some do have it. Verizon has spent $18 billion so far for fiber to the home and have a plan of reaching 18 million homes by 2010. AT&T has spent $4.6 billion so far and have reached 19 million homes with fiber. In closing your packet that we handed out, you'll find several letters of support from businesses and organizations underscoring the need for a statewide policy. You may ask why businesses are so interested in this topic. After all, large and medium-sized businesses can afford the bandwidth that they need. This is true. But small businesses and emerging startups will need to have the ability to develop and grow to boost our economy. Large and medium businesses will need a robust community where we can attract employees, particularly for high-tech jobs, where these tech-savvy consumers rent movies online and purchase music through iTunes directly to their iPods. Large businesses need a broadband infrastructure to offer flexibility to employees and disaster recovery plans for our employees, as well as support a robust educational environment for our families. We have a letter from someone that I would like to read that was unable to be here today. This is also enclosed in your packet, but I want to highlight a few points. This is a letter from Dr. Travis Severay. He's an assistant clinical professor at the University of Minnesota. Hello, my name is Dr. Travis Severay. I'm an assistant clinical professor of medical imaging at the College of Veterinary Medicine, University of Minnesota. After receiving my doctorate of veterinary medicine, I completed an additional 3-year radiology reference to become a board-certified veterinary radiologist. I volunteer my time with the DIG group because I believe it's an improved internet infrastructure in the state will profoundly improve medical care for pets and people across Minnesota. I've prepared this statement in support of House File 2107. Let me tell you why. Diagnostic images in radiology departments in veterinary medicine and human medicine are increasingly being captured and stored in digital format. Ultrasound, CT, and MR images are already in digital image format, and soon the majority of clinics will also use digital radiology. Digital images are easily portable and storable, two features which make the visual information an extremely valuable part of the electronic medical record. Depending on the type of digital image, radiograph, CT, or ultrasound video clips, the total image files can be enormous in size. The development of internet infrastructure and digital medical imaging provides the opportunity for distantly located radiology experts to interact with primary care providers, raising the standard of healthcare for patients, either animal or human. This two-way sharing of information is the essential in teleradiology. There are approximately 1,650 actively practicing veterinarians in the state of Minnesota. There are 5 active board member certified veterinary radiologists, with 4 at the University of Minnesota, and all 5 are located in the Twin Cities. This is approximately 330 veterinarians across the state to 1 radiologist located here in the metro. The impact of myths, incorrect, and superficial diagnosis on patient care is obvious. He goes on to explain how that access, and you can read this in your packet, how access to this and how that you can get to a radiologist to really understand that the diagnosis is important. Right now, the alternative is for people to drive to the Twin Cities to get this diagnosis. So. All of my comments are directly applicable to the much larger field of human telemedicine. Obviously, ultra-high broadband communication is critical in human medicine, where every minute is essential. Ultra-high broadband speeds will fulfill the promise of telemedicine in Minnesota. Thank you for your time. In closing, I've made a case for why our state needs a policy and a goal for ultra-high speed broadband. As our state's policymakers, you are in a position to move this forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hochschild. Members, questions? Representative Jensen?
Are we for the bill or just for the witness?
Just for the witness at this point.
Then I don't know. I have questions from the bill.
Got it. So do I. All right. Okay. Do you have any other questions first? Representative Mason?
No, we are all set. There are other people here if we have questions, but otherwise.
Very good. Well, thank you for your testimony. Let's move to anyone else wants to testify in support of the bill we have.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is James Erickson. I'm here on behalf of Fiber First Minnesota, a nonprofit trade association and advocacy group for the deployment of fiber optics and fiber to the home here in Minnesota. Fiber First is supported, as many trade associations are, by individuals and vendors that have an interest in bringing fiber optic technology and fiber optic deployment, true high-speed fiber optic deployment to the state of Minnesota. I'm here in very adamant to support of the legislation. Unfortunately, Minnesota is the nation falling behind in the deployment of the vital highway of fiber optics, both in the international community and in the local state. And this chart, as demonstrated there, shows that we are woefully behind and falling behind further other states that are taking up action. I want to support this step as an important first step, a very modest one, though, and something the legislature should certainly do and look at doing far more. Even in spite of the difficult economic times, now is the time to take bold steps in this very important infrastructure area. I think it is not an overstatement to say that while this looks like a modest task force approach to a problem, it might be one of the most important bills you consider and pass this legislation this year, because it is really looking and bringing Minnesota, and hopefully the rest, leading the rest of the nation, into a requirement so that we can be economically viable in the future. Everything that the previous testifier told you is true, and I want to compliment particularly Thompson for their leadership in demonstrating and their commitment to what the necessity of this is for businesses such as theirs and others. So Representative Masson and Ethan and Bill and Thompson and West really should be credited for what they're doing. Let me just make a couple short points, because it's been well said and will be well said by others, about the bill itself, and a couple subtle differences that I'd like you to point out and have you think about as this bill goes forward. The amendment, the Strike Everything Amendment, is, of course, I think, sets up a task force and says to the rest of the world and to all the providers in this state that this is an important thing and we should do something about it. A couple subtle changes in the Strike Everything Amendment, and I want to point those out to you and keep those, we'd be cognizant of them. In the bill itself, it started out by putting within the list of duties and considerations that the PUC had, the list, and if you look at the original bill, you'll see that it strikes some language that I think is significant and we should always bear in mind. It strikes the word, we're encouraging economically efficient deployment of infrastructure for high speed and so on. This bill changes it from a board to a task force, and I think it has a very robust task force. But it lists this as a goal of the state within Chapter 237, the regulatory environment. But it would certainly be possible, and I will predict it would be, and for those who are not, who are hostile to the objectives of this legislation, to suggest that the language that remains now, encouraging economically efficient deployment of infrastructure, could be used as an argument against doing what we think we need to do. And I just suggest to the representative and those of you as this goes forward that is a shibboleth that would remain in legislation, which, while important, should not be used as a tool to delay and the deployment of this vital infrastructure that we need to put in place. The other thing I'd suggest is that in the original bill, it directed the governor to appoint a state agency officer to be the broadband policy director, a czar, if you will, of this. I would hope the governor would do that on his own, in spite of the resource challenges that the state of Minnesota has. A task force is wonderful, and I think the task force is well-structured and well-formed and will bring to the bear its expertise. But what we really need is action, and individual action by government, and somebody doing something. The governor and this legislature. So I commend you for what you're trying to do here. I want to tell you how important it is that you continue to do this, and all the other things you're doing, Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, have legislation to spend money on really mapping what's going on here, which is an essential first step of where we need to go. But Minnesota is falling behind. The United States is falling behind. We want to bring to the citizens of Minnesota, we have to bring to the citizens of Minnesota the benefits of the economic development that fiber optics, ultimately to the home, can bring. And if we don't, we're going to simply fall further behind. This is an economic development issue. This isn't just some pie-in-the-sky discussion about things that would be nice. And I encourage, and I think this task force will encourage, our private sector here in the state of Minnesota to work with us to bring that forward and to bring it to bear. Municipalities, private sector entities are all in the process of putting this together and getting there. The people will demand it. It's inevitable. The sooner we get at this, the better. So I support your work and Thompson's work and everything that is going on here in terms of this great endeavor. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony, Mr. Erickson. Any questions for the testifier? And again, we'll take direct questions to the bill once we complete the testimony from folks here and in the audience. But any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you. Any others in support who want to say a few words? Commissioner Garvey, welcome again.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce for Energy and Telecommunications. The Department of Commerce is comfortable with the delete all amendment. We believe that we should have an aggressive, aspirational, but achievable goal for the speed of our communication system, and that the important part is to actually be figuring out how to achieve that goal. We think that the construct of the delete all amendment, with the establishment of such an aggressive but aspirational and achievable goal, with the task force to work out how to achieve it, is the appropriate and best way to move the state forward. Mr. Chairman, I'll be ready to answer any questions you may have. Oh, one other question on that. The delete all amendment does have the Department of Commerce providing staff support to the task force. We will be able to take that on without any fiscal impact.
Thank you, Commissioner Garvey. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a question for Commissioner Garvey. I would just like to know what your office is doing to work with BEAD to address some of the issues that have been brought up by some of our small businesses in rural Minnesota with regard to filing state forms that they need to file. We heard this summer when we had a public hearing, and thank you again to the committee for coming up to the north part of the state. And listening to some of our small businesses talking about the difficulty that they had with, you know, meeting the requirements that the state has for business forms, reporting, and they, you know, would have to actually drive 20, 25 miles one way to go to a friend's place or the library if it was open in order to file these forms, and then they would hope very much that they didn't accidentally leave a piece of their file at home, requiring another return trip home to pick up the paper to come back simply to file forms with the state. And I'm wondering if your office is working with other state offices to work with some of these businesses that do not have anything except dial-up that works poorly, and trying to fill in these forms that are required by the state. Thank you.
Mr. Garvey?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Stiller, I'm not completely understanding of the issue, and I would like to very much understand that more and so that I can respond to the question better, but I'm not exactly sure of the problem as you're describing it. If you're describing it that businesses have to file forms and applications like we are at, like the folks at the other side of the Department of Commerce have to file for licensing. We at the Department of Commerce have worked very hard to move towards electronic filing, but I don't know enough to be able to comment for other state agencies, but I would be willing to talk with you to get a better handle on it and look within the administration to find out what is being done and be able to get back to you on that.
And many of these forms are also with Department of Revenue. But it's not just one department. There are several, and this was brought up, has been brought up to me a number of times by some of our small businesses that are impacted. So I would very much like to visit with you about that. Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions, comments for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you very much. Commissioner, any other folks supporting this initiative that would like to say a few words? Very good, and give the opportunity for those who either in opposition or have other comments they'd like to make. You're welcome to come up to the table at this time to make those comments. Concerns or opposition, however you want to put it.
Mr. Chair, would you like to handle this as a panel?
Or yeah, let's handle it as a panel. I think there seems to be some general agreement, I think, on provider's perspective. And for the committee members' perspective, as the folks get settled there, the likely path for this bill, assuming it gets out of here okay, is it'll go to Commerce and Labor. After that, it goes to GovOps, and that's where they'll really take a closer look at the task force issues, I suspect,
So kind of FYI, not that we can't look at them here too, but that will also be a committee that takes that issue on. And with that, folks at the desk, would identify yourself and go ahead and give your testimony.
Mr. Chair, my name is Randy Young. I'm president of the Minnesota Association for Rural Telecommunications. We represent the family-owned and co-op telephone companies around rural Minnesota. We, too, feel that this is an important public policy issue for the state of Minnesota, not just for the industry, not just for our customers, but for the economic viability of the state and for many other factors. In order to develop good public policy, we think you need to take a ready, aim, fire approach rather than a ready, fire, aim approach. We think that the Strike Everything Amendment goes a long ways to doing that ready, aim, fire approach. Makes much more sense, we think, to take a look at the issues, study the issues, before developing public policy and creating goals or mandates that would be imposed upon the industry and upon the state. To give you a we do have two concerns with the Strike Everything Amendment the way it is right now, however. To give you a sense of magnitude, for example, of the goal that is in the bill right now, and that's the 250 meg goal for every home and business in the state. Let me give you a couple of perspectives on that bandwidth. If you were to take the following towns of Asgrove, Barnum, Black Duck, Clearbrook, Cosmos, Cortland, Candy, Ojai, Kelleher, Kettle River, Lafayette, Lake Lillian, Nicollet, Pennock, Prinsburg, Red Lake Falls, Stewart, and Sturgeon Lake. Every household in every one of those communities could simultaneously be having a telephone conversation on a 250 megabit line. Now you say, well, that's really kind of irrelevant to what we're talking about here, because we're talking about more than telephone conversations. We're talking about broadband usage and high-definition television. When you look at that, what does a 250 megabit line give you? Staff is going to hand out pictures better than a 1,000-word demonstration of that. And while that's being handed out, maybe I should make another comment on the 250 megabit requirement that's in the bill right now. Unfortunately, there's no equipment that can do that today. In talking with a number of the manufacturers of equipment, they make 100 megabit and a gigabit, but there's nothing in between, which means you either don't have the equipment to provide it, or you're buying equipment that's in excess of what you need and dialing it back to 250. We don't think that that makes a whole lot of sense. And I think it highlights the fact that probably in order to create proper goal setting, those issues ought to be looked at by the task force too, rather than mandating those in statute and then just having a task force kind of fine-tune around those edges. With that kind of information, I think the state can come up with better public policy with a little more research and a little more information. What you have before you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, on the first illustration there, is what basically 10 megabits will give an average household. And that's pretty much what a rather aggressive, active household is using today. One child can be playing video on an HDTV, another teenager can be on the computer, a separate connection, an adult can be watching HDTV, and another adult can be on the phone and on the computer with a separate connection. We think that 25 megabit is probably reasonable for the reasonable future. The second page kind of illustrates that for you. You have one child that's on the phone, on the computer, again with a separate internet connection, and playing video on an HDTV. At the same time, another teenager can be on the phone, on the computer, again with a separate connection, and watching HDTV. At the same time, an adult can be on the phone and watching a different HDTV, and a fourth person can be on the phone and on the computer with a separate connection. If you look at the third page, the third illustration, that's what a home with 250 megabits could be doing. They could have 25 HDTVs going at the same time, watching different channels, 25 computers with 25 different connections going at the same time and 25 phone conversations going at the same time. We're not sure that that's necessary or that it makes a whole lot of sense. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we think that the task force approach is probably the appropriate way to go. We don't feel, however, that the time frame or the speed should be included in statute, but it should be something that the task force should be looking at. We also think that among the list of goals or issues that the task force ought to be looking at is the cost of deployment. What would this, once they set a bandwidth goal, what's the cost of that for being deployed? Right now, the amendment doesn't deal with what's the cost of providing this to the state of Minnesota. With that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd be glad to answer any questions or turn it over to Mr. Martin.
Thanks for your testimony, Mr. Young. Questions for the testifier, comments? Representative Thiessen?
Yes, and this is maybe for any of them, but the dental and medical office that needs the higher speed technology, could they get that on the market today if they really needed to get that, if you're a hospital, for instance?
In most cases, the answer is yes, particularly if it's in a town. The vast majority of towns that are served by the independent telephone companies have that available to them. 90% of our customers have got high-speed internet today, particularly if they're in town and they need a higher speed above 10 meg or something, it can be provided. Yes. I can't, Representative Thiessen, talk to other communities or other providers, though.
Right, very good. Thanks for your testimony, Mr. Martin. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one question for the testifier, and that is, I'm wondering, you know, without time frames and aggressive goals, how are we going to be able to reasonably address the needs that were spoken of with regard to our ranking earlier, with, you know, the United States falling back to beyond 15th, and then our upload and download speeds that were at 22nd in the state of Minnesota. I'm just concerned that without some sort of aggressive goal, how are we really seriously going to address the fact that we're not up where we ought to be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Taylor, I think there are two or three issues in that question. One is, should there be a goal or not? Our feeling is that the marketplace will meet the demands of the customers and the economy of the state of Minnesota. A goal that is too aggressive could very well end up with inappropriate and unwise economic decisions being made to deploy technology before there's any need for it or any use for it. If there is a goal that is going to be developed by the state, it ought to be developed by the working group rather than through statute without having adequate information as to what are the implications of that goal. And the third comment, I guess, would be, I am a little leery of a lot of these statistics that are being thrown around about how we're 858, two countries behind Bangladesh in our deployment of broadband. FCC Commissioner McDowell did a study maybe about 8 months ago and took the formula that was used in ranking America as 15th or whatever it was, and plugged in numbers if every household in the state, in the country, had access to broadband. The way the formula for developing those rankings were calculated, even with every household in the country having broadband, we would still be like number 7th or 8th. So there are a lot of questions as to the legitimacy of these rankings. How do you really rank them? You have to look at disparity of the size of the country, how dispersed the population is. If you take population along with deployment, along with the geographic size of the country, and take all of those factors, the National Exchange Carrier Association calculated that America would be number 2 in deployment of broadband, second only behind Canada. And the only reason Canada would be ahead of us is most of their population is in a narrow band right at the U.S. border, and the rest of their country is pretty much unpopulated. So a lot of these figures, I have a little concern that they're probably not accurate, and they're probably giving a little false presentation as to the true state of deployment in this country.
Very good. Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Young, I find myself on the horns of a dilemma here, because at one level, in naming Cortland and Nicollet, and I sure as heck want to make sure that the folks in my district have access to as good of connectivity as they should have. At the same time, I'm not so sure what that level is. I'm not sure whether it's 250 or whether it's 10 or some number in between. But I do agree with you. I'm concerned about what are the cost implications if the goal becomes 250. I was wondering if you could expand for me, because while I like your 25 HDTV chart and that, doesn't really tell me what on the farm my folks need, because this is a little delayed at some level. But could you give me some sense of what maybe in rural Minnesota the connectivity needs really are in running, say, a farming operation?
Mr. Yep. Chairman, Representative Morrow, that really varies, I think, from household to household. A lot of the bandwidth hogs that we're looking at right now, quite frankly, is video, high definition and regular video. That's what takes most of the bandwidth that's going into a home if you're providing triple play. And quite frankly, all of the players, whether they're the cable companies or the telephone companies, are doing a triple play today. That is voice, video, and internet. You have to do that in order to afford to put in the infrastructure, the fiber, and that that's needed to provide it. So the biggest bandwidth hog is the video. Compression of video is advancing such that you're able to do the same amount of high definition on a smaller and smaller bandwidth. Most of our companies now have a minimum maximum. That is, they're in the 3 to 5 gig a meg range without some with and some without the video component.
Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, just to follow up, make sure I'm a little more clear then. If the goal is 250 megabits, and it's 2015, what are the cost implications potentially for Nicollet and Cortland, since you mentioned them in your presentation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, we don't have calculations as to what 250 would be. Mr. Knickerbocker can testify to what it would have been at a gig, because we did do a study of that. And I don't think you can cut that into a quarter and say that's what it is, but it may give you a little order of magnitude as to what the cost would be. And I think that's another good reason, Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, why the cost implications ought to be looked at by the task force, as well as setting the goal by the task force, so they can weigh those two rather than having one set and then you're stuck with that. What's that going to cost? Well, that's too much. Nobody can afford that. You can do some adjustments and some trade-offs there.
Representative Hockey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of a follow-up to Representative Morrow's question. Not only what's it going to cost, but who pays for it? Who pays for the initial build-out once you get whatever kind of line we're looking at, whatever kind of speed? Who pays for the monthly charge? What's it going to cost?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hoppe, the citizens will pay for it ultimately, whether it's through taxes or through higher rates for the services that they're providing. One of the big concerns that we have is that if you deploy too much technology before there's a demand for it, that technology is going to sit there. It's going to have to be paid for. It's already been put into the ground or into the homes or into the central offices. And if it's not being used and it's not generating any revenue, that means that the cost of the existing services that customers are using at a lower rate is going to have to go up to pay for the advanced technology that's been put out there but isn't being used. That's why we think that it really needs to be a staged approach, where as there's a demand for the technology, it's deployed so that it can be paid for and it's not sitting there and yet having to be paid for and not generating any revenue.
Thanks. All right, thank you very much. I don't see any further questions. So, Mr. Martin, do you want to
yourself? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mike Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. We're the trade association of cable television companies in Minnesota. I want to thank you and Representative Mason for bringing this issue forward. As you know, the cable companies are a major provider of high-speed broadband services. Since the middle of the 90s, the industry has spent billions of dollars to upgrade their facilities
and develop and deploy technologies to meet the growing consumer demand in this area. Be assured that this investment goes on at a continuous rate. As you know, we're deploying new techniques, new software, new developments that will continue to enable us to offer higher and higher speeds to our customers. And just around the corner, we're looking at speeds of 20, 50, and even 100 megabit service will be common in the coming years. And this is through a multiple of things, better spectrum management, and other innovations that the industry has invested in. As Mr. Young said, the real spectrum hog today is HD television and other video applications. Certainly the triple play has driven the deployment of these services. But we continue to find consumers very satisfied in the 3 to 5 to 8 megabit rate, and that's an important consideration. We certainly support the creation of the broadband advisory and support the changes that have been made. We think it's a much better bill than it was originally introduced. However, we would echo Mr. Young's comments that the emphasis really shouldn't be on speed, the goal shouldn't be on speed, that the state should be looking at a number of other factors, and one that hasn't been mentioned is this whole concept of who's served and who's not served. I think the idea of getting broadband services to unserved areas is a very critical element, and one that I know is the subject of other legislation, but one that is very important for creating a baseline of data that I think the state needs in order to move ahead on policy. So the mapping bill, I know, Mr. Chairman, that you're authoring that measure, and I think that's a critical element in this whole discussion, and the two are very closely and shouldn't be excluded. But again, I think speed is an unnecessary emphasis in this. I looked around, a lot of states have produced reports on these without adopting the speed goal. Looking at California, for example, their recommendations are, number one, build out the high-speed infrastructure. They're not indicating the speed, but they're saying that's the number one. Build out the infrastructure, reach those unserved areas. Much of their report, if you look at it, deals with building out to unserved areas. Other recommendations really deal with the use of the technology, encouraging its use, developing its use, training, and incorporating it into educational and health networks. Creating a statewide e-health network was one of their recommendations. But again, the focus is on application and use and the things that we support, which are investing in new infrastructure, innovating and continuing to keep a competitive element in the deployment of these facilities. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Good. Thanks very much for your testimony. Questions, comments for a testifier? Seeing none, thank you very much. Any others who would like to speak briefly in with concerns or in opposition? Go ahead, Mr. Nickelbach. You want to make a few comments?
Chairman, members, the record, my name is Jerry Nickelbach. I'm with the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, the trade group for the local phone companies in the state of Minnesota. For those of you like me who better understand these things and see something visual, handout passed out that addresses something that the Telephone Association, with the help of its suppliers, put together when this bill was 1 gigabit at 2015. And I think it still is useful in its success on 250, because there's still some things that remain constant no matter what we talk about in terms of numbers. And I'd like to go back and maybe to call your attention to a couple of different pages. When we were talking about building a network from scratch, a backbone network and a distribution network, we sat down and said, okay, what would it cost if we had to do this? And that's the number you see on the fruit page, $10.4 billion. And if you had to service that debt and to pay for that by 2015, how much would it monthly cost be based on the current existing take rate, both in metro and urban areas, of broadband based on Jack Geller's study, which was presented to the committee earlier in the legislative session. That rate would be $544 a month, and of course we've got people that have to pay for costs out of their pocket in order to get hooked up to pay for the $544 a month, and that's maybe another $1,400 a month depending on the level of the computer you already have at your home. But to Representative Morrow's earlier question about trying to figure out where we are today, I call your attention to this chart with the little red box down here in the left-hand corner. This is where the most use is from the current applications and services that are being provided. Down here in this lower left-hand corner, here's where you can run, you know, your 256K, your 3 megabit. Get voice, video data, email, web searching. You get up to five, six mark there on the hash mark. And again, that's where DSL and the cable modems are today. And if you get up to 10, that's where Wi-Fi networks are. And if you get up to about 30, that's where 30 and 40, that's where the range where AT&T with their U-verse system and Verizon with its Fido system is providing video services is really sort of the cutting edge in terms of a broadband application on a large basis here in the United States. You get up around 50, and I'm told that's where the state of the art is in the business community. That's where Verizon Business Services offers their broadband-related services. So the point I want to make is that there's all kinds of activity going on at the present level from 50 and below. And of course, the original bill wanted to take us up to a gigabit, which was way up here. And the point was going to be made that, you know, there is no network, there are no equipment, there are no standards to build out a residential network in the state of Minnesota as the bill that would ask us to try to do to a gigabit. Now, if we're starting to talk about 250, again, there's no such thing. You know, as Mr. Young said earlier, the networking is such that you need to buy a gigabit, 10 or 100 megabits. There is no 250, so you're going to have to do some engineering sorts of things that don't exist in order to build a network of residential and business users here in the state of Minnesota to make that happen. The other handout that at the end of the series of pages you've got, you know, kind of shows the bandwidth capacity, what a gigabit would represent. And I realize that's not what we're talking about today, but that's the equivalent of the capacity of a 5-inch water hose. The 250 obviously would be less, but the cost in order to build the network don't come down by a fourth from the $10.4 billion. And there are some engineering and equipment and technology and interoperability issues that would have to be met in order to develop that network, even at 250, because they don't exist today at the present time. So the bill is amended, the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, if you does not have, and if you've already heard from the previous speaker, an opposition setting up a task force to look at these issues, collect information, and then make some decisions as to what ought to be the policy of the state of Minnesota. But I think to arbitrarily pick a number, 250 or really just a gigabit, I'm saying the 250 or the gigabit, because of technology and what's involved in terms of the cost and capacity, really don't make a difference. That number is still too basic for what's going on in the real world, let alone squared with what the real use is today, way back down here at 50 megabits and below. So if you put the numbers out, speed and the year, I think that goes a long way towards giving the task force a charge, but not setting up some sort of unrealistic standard that they've got to come up and develop policies and recommendations to try to meet. It's sort of beforehand determining the outcome and the conclusion that you want the task force to meet, and then justify your number. And we don't think that would be a proper way to go. The other thing that I would add is looking at the makeup of the membership of the committee. I think you've got 19 people. You have four providers, and that seems a little unweighted. I think if you want a real good discussion of what's possible and what we ought to do, you got to have some people who are in the real world providing these services at present time and understand that, okay, we've already made all these kind of broadband investments across the state, and our take rates are like 30%, and now you people are sitting here talking about going to 250. You know, who's going to take it? Who's going to pay for it? What are the uses? That's part of the problem. There aren't demonstrated uses. There's no demonstrated market for this. There's a expression of we need to get here, but there's none of the service and support that comes behind it to carry out the goal once you get there.
Just so we're at time, Mr. Clark, I want to kind of move along here because I want to get to the bill directly and
work to
get the members.
I make the suggestion that the membership of the task force be better balanced between providers and users. And I think Mr. Martin made a very good point that the real problem is trying to identify the underserved areas and get broadband to the places where there is a legitimate identifiable need, but find a way to do it with task force participation or state participation.
Very good.
Partnership.
I think we got the gist of it. Mr. Schreiner?
Thank you, Chairman.
For record and make brief comments.
Very brief. Andy Schreiner, Director of Government Affairs for Quest. I want to echo the comments that the other panelists have made in the interest of time. Just make two quick comments. We believe there should be a focus on unserved areas. There are portions of the state, particularly in rural Minnesota, that are high cost, that are difficult for providers to get to, and we think the task force ought to make that a priority. Second, some sort of look by the task force at market demand. What are consumers buying? What are they willing to purchase? And what are their needs today? And what will their needs be in the foreseeable future? We're kind of playing pin the tail on the broadband number today, where we're just taking a shot at a gigabit, 250 megabits. Let's get a good sense of what the market demand is out there. And with that, I'll close and look forward to working with the chair and committee members and the author on working on the bill over the next couple of weeks.
Very good. Thank you very much for your testimony. Anybody else want to speak with concerns briefly? Good morning. Again, if you can identify yourself for the record, keep your comments relatively brief. And
they'll be brief, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my name is Tim Levison. I'm the president of the CWA, Minnesota State Council. CWA is Communication Workers of America. We represent the people that work for quite a few of the telephone companies here in Minnesota. On the surface, we are in favor of, and CWA has been in favor of speed matters. It's one of our things that we've pushed forward. We believe that in the United States that we do need to step up the speeds that are available. However, I've sat in on meetings that Representative Junkies had on mapping, and we believe that that's one of the first things that has to be done, is to see what's available and to make sure that high speed, whatever that definition is available to people throughout the state. Many of them are still have the only access they have is dial-up, and we know that that is not speed at all. That's agony at best. So that would be where we would say, let's go first. Let's see what we have to do in those areas. Now, we do know that there's a lot of speed available in certain areas that the people can't utilize because of the equipment they have in their house. Their computers won't handle it. One of the fellows that I run with over here, he is a technician for Quest, and he does DSL. And one of the stories he says is he deals with people that have computers that they've been sold 7 megabit service, but their computer is not going to handle it. So it's like putting a Yugo on the Autobahn. It's not going to fly. So these are the things that I think I'd like to see the task force look at, and I'd like to see that maybe on the task force that they put a spot on that task force for a tech, somebody that's working in the field every day with people that could give you a perspective of what's going on. I think that as we move forward, there is going to be a need for more and more speed, and the technician that I'm talking about is one of the younger generation. I'm of the older generation that probably can get us by just with DSL services I have today at 1.5. It works for me. But as these the younger kids and the newer generation comes up, they are going to be needing more speed because they're going to be downloading movies and what have you. So I'm not sure if 250 is a good number. And I hope that the task force doesn't get hung up on a number. I think what we should be looking at is, let's provide this service across the state. Let's start the mapping. I believe that's in another bill that's coming, and I hope that's part of this, because I think it's probably the most important part of it. And let's go at it a sensible thing. And in the telecommunication industry, you have competition. Now, if you had where it was a regulated monopoly, I think you could probably pressure them, but you got to understand the economics that these companies, they don't like to share secrets. You've heard that already. And they all have their ways of trying to make money, and they can't make investments without it. And I'll be honest with you, too. Our companies are union companies, and they pay a hell of a lot better than some of the non-union companies, and we're concerned about that, too. So we got to make sure that when this goes forward, it's done in a way that people are not roadkill on the superhighways here.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I think we'll move to the bill at this point. Start with Representative Jenkins.
Well, a number of things. Good comments from everyone, and certainly I do believe, Mr. Chair, and I'm sure you can confirm that mapping bill is coming here, right?
That is indeed the correct.
It is the chair's bill, by the way, so I'm second on there now, and I appreciate it because I think Representative Johnson is the appropriate person to bring that forward and get it passed, but we're certainly working together, and we hear how important that bill is to get done. So whether it's in conjunction or moving side by side, that's one thing. I just want to make a comment before I get into the bill. My friend Mr. Young said, "Well, let the market take care of it." And while I love Mr. Young and I love all of you people, you know that doesn't happen in rural Minnesota. You just know it doesn't, you know. And I won't talk about lack of voicemail, and I won't talk about lack of broadband services, and I won't talk about lack of iPhones out there. Did I hit enough big people in the room now? But we know the market doesn't take care of it until years and years and years after it's available somewhere else, in rural Minnesota. And in fact, that's what we heard here, too. We need to focus on availability and filling the gaps and other things. And I hope the task force gets into that and understands that, and your mapping project does that and others. So, and I do appreciate the speed versus need comments we've heard, because I think that is true. We need to understand what the need is out there, both now and in the future. You know, to say the need is just for video, well, that's true, and that is filling it. And the 10 megabytes that's available isn't available unless you're up at 2 in the morning and there's only 2 of you on the pipe. You know, it's not available. So we need to understand all that. But to the bill now. I'm done prophecating. My first concern is the word ultra everywhere in here. I don't know where that came from or why we're doing it. When I look at the broadband initiative throughout...
Our concern is the word prosecuting.
Yeah. Where did that come from? And if our wireless was going in here, which it's not, I got to talk to the house too. I could look it up. But as I look at the other broadband initiatives around the countryside, I see high speed internet. I see universal broadband, broadband plan, broadband task force, broadband institute. No one is saying ultra or even high speed broadband. I think you're putting in definitions that shouldn't be there. And Representative Morrow said he's right. You know, if 250 is ultra high, then what's 1 gig then? Super ultra or 10 gig is mega, super mega, powerful, higher speed than ultra, ultra? Or, you know, we're putting in things I don't think should be there. It's all over this bill. I would just say a broadband task force or a universal broadband task force or something that's more simplified. Because, again, I think you're putting definitions in. So I'm not going to do an oral amendment until we see what else is coming, but I'd like to remove that. But the one amendment I would like to do, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to leave it to the Government Operations Committee, and I'm going to ask Bob Elias to help me with this, but we do need to add to the task force legislative members. I feel strongly about that. I've seen these task force work and work and work, and when they come to the legislature later to want to put legislation together, they have no advocates sitting at the table, none. And so we listen to it politely, and we put it in our files, and that's sometimes less we hear of it. But where you have members of both the minority and the majority party sitting there for over a year or a year and a half on these tasks, they come in with an ownership and with an ability, hopefully, to pass some of the legislation. So I would suggest that the chairs of the committees that oversee telecommunications name one minority and one majority member from each body, and I'd like to make a suggestion for that amendment if and when he's got it ready to go, because I do feel strongly on that without legislative voices on these task force, they kind of die when they get back here.
Very good. Well, as Mr. Elis putting that together, that will be a motion. Let's have some discussion about it. Representative Thiessen?
Want to discuss that motion?
Yeah, but discuss it.
Do you have it ready to go?
Not with that.
Okay. Well, I think we can discuss the concept without the specific one. I mean, you hear what he's talking about.
Here.
Yeah. Go to the next. While he's working
that,
he can...
What's that, Taylor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a similar concern with the makeup of the committee. I was looking at 1.25, line 1.25. Number 8, the 4 citizen-at-large members, equally divided between business and residential. Yeah, I agree with that, but I did not see any place for a citizen-at-large equally divided between rural and metro, and I would like to be sure that that is addressed in this.
Mr. Chair, I'll add on to that and add on to Representative Junkies. Maybe we should do that with legislators, too. One Senate, one House from each party, and make sure we have metro and rural, just so we cover all the bases.
Very good. Bob, is that all that?
Sorry.
So we're going to play a little bit as the words get put together. Representative Thiessen?
Well, I actually have an amendment, kind of a larger amendment, but maybe we should, and I've actually got it written out, so I can hand it to you later.
Can do that?
So, well.
Let's do that in the interest of time. Let's.
And it's long, so people want to take some notes. That might be good as we do this, okay? So this would be the amendment. The first would be to take out subdivision 1, to strike that, and also to strike the word ultra throughout the bill. And then at the end of line 1.10, so 1.10, add identifying the level of broadband service, comma, including connection speeds for both sending and receiving data, comma, that should be available to all citizens by 2015, and setting forth a plan for implementing the broadband goal, period, and then deleting line 1.11, and then on page 2, at line 2.13, after statewide, insert broadband deployment,
and then after plan, insert a period and strike the rest of the line. And then on line 2.14, strike everything up to the through the period, so that it would just start the report must include. And then after line 2.15, insert a new sub one that would say identification of the level of broadband service, comma, including connection speeds for both sending and receiving data, comma, that is reasonably needed by all citizens by 2015. And then on line 2.17, after the word investment, insert and identification of areas in the state that currently lack the infrastructure necessary to support broadband service. And then after line 2.23, and I'm almost done here, sorry, add another subpart that would say an estimation of the cost of reaching the broadband goal, including capital costs, and identification of who will bear those costs. And I guess that's it.
Okay, and that's your motion, Representative Thiessen?
Yeah. And so basically what it does is it takes the goal out and puts that in addition to a few other items that were raised here with the task force to come up with.
And your amendment, again, Representative Junkie, is?
Mine will be after him. If he made the motion, that's fine. We can adopt it because he took out all the ultras, and I'm just adding later on to the task force thing. It shouldn't affect his at all.
Okay, so we'll go ahead with Representative Thiessen's motion first. We're going to move to the discussion and give the author a chance to comment on it. Mason?
Okay, what I do want to emphasize is that I still think we need to have a goal. Certainly, did the lead all change the rate of going? But it... I think probably the most famous goal is Kennedy's trip to the moon, or achievement was to get the moon. It wasn't to get halfway to the moon or anything in between. The goal was to get to the moon, and so I think we still need to start with some type of goal. And I have no problem with the task force defining or changing it, but I think we certainly ought to have somewhere to go, and I think that's an important thing, just to at least have some type of all this does is set a minimum. And in view of what the people who are against this say, we need a goal. I mean, I just don't think you can accomplish anything. Certainly, after the task force does its work, maybe they can refine it or change that. But I would still like to maintain that we should keep the goal in this bill.
And Mr. Chair, and it does keep the goal in the bill, I think. It just says that task force should set that goal. And if we put the goal in statute, the task force actually couldn't change that goal because the legislature would have already put that in goal, in statute. So I think it actually keeps the goal in there. It's just that's one of the jobs of the task force, is to figure out what's a reasonable goal.
Very good. Any further discussions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I agree with Representative Thiessen and Representative Mason. For me, the goal is getting broadband to my rural constituents. I don't think they're asking me to get them there at a particular speed. Their goal is to get broadband. And I would be much more informed by the members of this task force about maybe what that number should be. But I do think Representative Thiessen is getting a goal.
And again, I agree with that too, because the goal is different for everyone. For Thompson West, we heard from, there is a goal that they need. But for our hospitals and clinics, it's another goal. For the farm, it's another goal.
And we need to understand what those numbers are, and we don't have that now. But the goal is still there in this bill. That's what the task force will do with the mapping bill, and because this task force reports back November 1st, 2009, and I think that correlates well because we hope if we can get funding and get the mapping bill done, that will be done hopefully about a year from now. And so that then would fit in well. The task force would be able to use those maps and then produce a report by the first. I think it fits very well. But again, the goal was to get to the moon, but we didn't say what kind of rocket or how big or what kind of fuel in the tank, or we didn't say, you know, what it was, you know, how we, the goal was to get there, but we didn't know exactly the route we would take. So, and we don't know that yet. So I think that Tiefen is right that we should let the task force work on that, not the legislature at this point, because we don't have the information. I'm very uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable with one gig, too. Maybe it should be 2 gigs. Maybe it should be 3. Maybe we're underdoing this. I just don't know.
Very good. Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would support the Tiefen Amendment and the things that Representative Morrow and Junkie have said. I think the goal is still there. It just makes it more viable.
Representative Mason, there's considerable support for the amendment. Did you have any last comments before we vote on it?
Yes. It would, my understanding is this will change the Senate version. If this will be different from the Senate version, then so that we can
vote. We're a lot better than the Senate.
Okay.
Remember where you're sitting.
Sorry about that.
All right. Doesn't sound like any other discussion on the matter. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Oh, did you want to read the amendment first, maybe?
I can read that. I also wanted to speak to Representative Junkie's amendment to make sure that I've got that right.
We're not doing that.
Okay, one at a time. Fine.
Opposed? Indicate by saying no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now let's move to Junkie's amendment. And do you have that, Ms. Sheila?
If I understand what you wanted, let me try. Page 2, line 3. Delete the word and at the end of the sentence. Page 2, line 4, delete the period and insert semicolon and. Page 2, after line 4, insert clause 12. Two members of the Senate, one from the metropolitan area and one from outside the metropolitan area, appointed by the chair of the committee with primary responsibility for telecommunications policy, semicolon, and then clause 13, two members of the House, one from the metropolitan area and one from outside the metropolitan area, appointed by the chair of the committee with primary responsibility for telecommunications policy.
Did it say minority majority?
Okay.
I'm just thinking of hockey.
Right.
No, it finally happened. Someone's thinking of me. Make sure you have a minority and majority.
Right.
We need that balance, too.
So
okay. I'd move right. That, and then I have another comment, but I'll do that separately.
Okay, the that particular amendment's been moved during the discussion phase.
I'd ask if the author is accepting of that.
Yes.
Representative Mason accepts it, so I think we can incorporate it into the amendment. Representative Saylor, do you have a...
Well, I just wanted to address the issue of rural metro, but we can make that separate.
Okay. Well, I think we're done with this part of it since Representative Mason's incorporated the...
Well, no, we have voted on.
Okay, hold on, okay. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails. That particular amendment is adopted as well.
And that might have been, Mr. Chair, if you look at clearly lines 1.17 and 1.8, and again, I'll let Mr. Eloff work on it, or... you can work on outside here, too, if you don't want to do it now. But I think it's great that we have telephone companies in the metro and the rural, but don't assume that the size of the telephone companies in the metro and the rural are necessarily big or little. I think that's kind of what it's implying. But we have very large the Quest, and we have those in Wilmer, as opposed to the smaller folks, too. So I think somehow you have to make sure that the phone companies that representative are both the larger international company, or national and international companies, as well as the smaller local companies. So I don't know how you do that or where you do it, but I think that's important in here, too, for some balance. And I'm not making a motion. I'm just having the author and the council think about that. If there's a way to do it now or moving forward, I'd like to see that so we don't have to do it on the floor of the House, I guess.
Very good. We'll take that definitely as a point of consideration. Representative Hockey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. It doesn't say in the lead-all who appoints the committee. I mean, it says that they make recommendations to the governor, but who gets to appoint the members? I mean, who decides which telecom people and which legislators and everything? Because we could do that right here.
I don't think we have enough time today.
I know. Very diplomatic answer.
They come in one at a time and say whether...
Representative Nathan, could you address that concern of Representative Hoppe?
I think I already answered that. Originally, the intent was to have the governor make the appointment.
Representative Hopping?
We don't necessarily need to do that today. Maybe they can do that in the bond.
That's another point of information to fix as it moves through the process here, is to clarify who was actually appointing the task force. Thank you, Representative Hopping. And Representative Sarah, you wanted to make an amendment, I believe, with respect to task
force. Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that would be on line 1.26. After the word residential, to insert comma, rural, and metro before users.
Okay, did everyone get that amendment being proposed?
So that would read between business and residential, rural, and metro users.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Saylor moves that. Representative Junkie?
So the amendment should probably say metropolitan area, since that's on line 2.5. It's just a technical thing, but that's how you describe it. It wasn't a metro, it was a metropolitan area. That's
okay.
Actually described.
That's fine with you, Representative Saylor? Okay.
And then it should probably say metropolitan area and non-metropolitan area, because we didn't describe a rural necessarily.
Could you reread that once again, Bob?
Four citizen at large members representing internet users equally divided between business and residential, comma, business and residential users, comma, rural and metropolitan area, which also say users. Mr. Chair?
Don't figure it out.
I have a suggestion regarding Representative Junkie's most recent question. On line 118, getting at the large and small telephone companies in rural areas, we could insert after the word companies with fewer than 50,000 subscribers.
Is that satisfactory?
At this point, but if there needs to change, I'm sure the author is open to that. So, and if Saylor would incorporate that into hers, then you could do it all at one.
Saylor, would you be willing to incorporate that into your...
yes, Mr. Chair, I will.
There you go.
Okay, I think we're all set. Now, any further discussion on this particular amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments at this time? Representative Mason, would you like to make any final comments before we...
No, I just think it's imperative that our state gets to the point where we have the goals, and I think this bill gets us to where it looks like we are being serious about the issue. So I would appreciate your support for moving this forward.
Well, thank you, Smith, for engaged intention on this. Representative moves House Bill 2107 as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Any further issues for the committee? I don't see any. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you.